Hello everybody, I'm your host Harold Curtis, and I'd like to welcome you to The Space Industry by SatSearch, where we share stories about the companies taking us into orbit. In this podcast, we delve into the opinions and expertise of the people behind the commercial space organizations of today, who could become the household names of tomorrow. Before we get started with the episode, remember you can find out more information about the suppliers, products, and innovations that are mentioned in this discussion on the global marketplace for space at satsearch.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Space Industry Podcast by SatSearch. Now, I'm joined today by John Holst, who is an analyst, a writer, consultant, author of the Ill-Defined Space newsletter and several other articles and pieces of work that you may have read. You may be familiar with him and his writing. And really pleased to have John on the show today. And we're going to discuss the launch segment, a topic that somewhat surprisingly we don't cover all that often on the Space Industry Podcast, because we've mostly been concerned with speaking to suppliers who are building missions, building satellites, etc. So it'll be great to get John's perspective on this vital piece of the puzzle in the space industry. John, thank you very much for joining us today. Just wanted to say, to set the scene for all our listeners out there, I wondered if you could give them a bit of an overview of your work in the industry, talk about the newsletter that you publish and what you've done, what you're doing.
Hal, thank you very much, first off, for inviting me on the podcast. It was unexpected, and this will be fun, I'm sure. So again, thank you for that. I'm a space industry researcher and analyst. I write about the activities in the space industry, and I also consult with some folks on this stuff. It's something I enjoy doing. And Ill-Defined Space is really the result of that. The website is full of my research. Also have the space activity dashboards there for folks just to look at and just gain a fairly user-friendly understanding of the launch numbers and the spacecraft deployed and all that.
Fantastic. That's great. Now, where I wanted to start was, I read an article that you'd wrote for Astrolytical, which I'll link up in the show notes for this. It went out in January, discussing the well-known topic of SpaceX's dominance over launch in the commercial industry, and I guess many aspects of the commercial industry in general. In it, for example, there's a quote from you that in 2023, 30% of the world's launches and 70% of spacecraft were dedicated to one company's space business, which catered to less than 0.5% of the world's population. This is a major dependency in the industry and is well known and well discussed. But why do you think other companies, other launch companies, have been unable or maybe even unwilling to compete with SpaceX?
So, just to be clear, that particular sentence was in reference to Starlink, just in case folks don't quite understand that. And yeah, it's SpaceX launching its own spacecraft, and a lot of those 70% of the world's spacecraft are basically dedicated to 1% or less than 1% of the world's population to cater to them. But to be fair to the other launch companies, if we're going to get into that, they do, or they had businesses to protect, right? They had existing businesses that they were doing pretty well. They were making money. So ULA and Arianespace, which are basically the two companies I consider to be SpaceX competitors, they averaged for the last two decades, let's see, ULA averaged about 8 launches per year, and Arianespace a little higher, about 10 launches per year. And that's including the Soyuz launches that they're using from the Russians. That includes the ones from, say, Baikonur or Vostochny. And I honestly don't consider the Soyuz launches really a European launch system. They are a Russian launch system that are, I guess if you want to call it, being leased by the Europeans to launch satellites up. So if you take that away, then Arianespace actually is substantially less as far as the average of launches. SpaceX, on the other hand, in the past 10 years has managed to launch an average of 21 launches per year. And most of that average accumulation, if you want to call it that, has been during the past 2 or 3 years, where it's just significantly just jumped up in launch activity from that company. They have existing businesses to protect, but they are experiencing changes that just they have not faced before. And one of the big changes is they're facing SpaceX, which is a hardware company, but they're treating their hardware like a software company, where you're seeing constant iterations with the Falcon 9. I don't think the other two expected SpaceX to jump from their small sat Falcon 1 to Falcon 9 and then have the Falcon 9 be so successful. and then add reusability on top of that. And the fact that they kept the initial mass to orbit capability of the Falcon 9 was not that of an Ariane 5 or an Atlas 5. But with the different changes that they kept implementing, it's significant now, to the point that with the latest Starlink launch, they're putting nearly 20 tons of satellites up in orbit from Starlink alone, just in one launch. And it's rare to see a rocket used to almost full mass capability in that regard. The other part is, I think it's just not in these companies' DNA, right? They are companies that are serving, well, typically they have a cornerstone of government business, whether it's military or civil. And those help pay those bills and maybe even subsidize some of the commercial activities that they can or capture. Although with ULA, it was hard to tell because it still seemed like the launch was fairly expensive. These companies didn't really like changing that often. I think what the Ariane 5, there aren't very many iterations of it, and they're very small tweaks. But I think that system's been around since 96, and ULA's heritage with Atlas and Deltas has gone back for decades. Yeah, they've updated the technology, but they don't like changing it. And we could even see that with something like ULA's refusal, even though it received money to change engines, that the Russian engine dependency that it had, to build its own engine. It never did, which is one reason why it's in the situation it's in now. It's relying on Blue Origin, a competitor, really, to build its engines. I think part of it is the DNA, part of it is the business. And then the other part is just they're not used to dealing with a company who treats their hardware so cavalierly, which is what SpaceX really does.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And as you mentioned as well, having Starlink as its own internal program to develop launch systems for continually and generate revenue all internally is powerful. What do you see these launch companies that you've mentioned or indeed even others having to do in order to try and get to even say halfway towards SpaceX's annual launch capacity?
We talked about this being in commercial. So if we're talking, are we including Starlink when we're talking about commercial launches? Because most folks account it that way. But honestly, I view that as like an internal thing.
Yeah, I think if we could discount that, maybe we're looking at the rideshare.
I think then you're lowering the range some from, what was it? Last year was about 60 launches. I can't remember right now for SpaceX. And probably about 40 of those or something were Starlink. So we're looking still at a pretty high launch rate. With that said, it's going to take a few years, no matter who it is, I think, to catch up with that cadence to even get to 50%. We have Ariane Spas just talking a good game about saying, hey, with Ariane 6, we're going to go ahead and we're going to do our test launch this year. And by end of 2025, we'll be up to, I don't know, I think they were saying 15 launches a year, which is, they've never done that with Ariane 5. They launched maybe about an average of 6 times a year with Ariane 5. So the company is not used to even conducting a launch pace like that. There's more than the technology, right? They have to have the crews that are trained to be able to turn these around quickly. They have to have the operational floor that has to now suddenly be used to conducting many more launches. That takes time. It's not just the rocket itself. And then the fact that the rocket probably is, the Ariane 6 in particular, is probably more of a stopgap now. I don't think it's going to catch up with SpaceX's launch tempo. ULA, the other company that should be competitive, there are now hints of it being acquired by Blue Origin. Who knows? Who knows what happens with that? But I don't think it's healthy for ULA to be acquired by Blue Origin, because then Blue Origin basically has an old legacy. In their eyes, it's older than New Glenn, because New Glenn's supposed to be this reusable system. And now you have a non-reusable system that's wasting the engines that they're struggling to build already. So I have to wonder just how well ULA, the Vulcan, is going to fare under the stewardship of a Blue Origin company. I think what Blue Origin gets out of it are the contracts, the military and Kuiper contracts with ULA, but I don't know how that all works for Vulcan, especially when they're trying to developed their own rocket, New Glenn. There was a lot of news just showing how the very fact that it was in the launch pad got people excited, but it's still a few years away, I think, from actual launch. I don't think either one of them will be able to get to 50% of what SpaceX is doing right now. If we were looking at other companies, Rocket Lab with Neutron, they're developing the Neutron. I would say Rocket Lab has the DNA a bit more than the other two and the hunger to compete with SpaceX. It doesn't have the traditions and the business to protect that the other two do. And as well, Neutron is going to be reusable. I'm not saying reusability is critical for these systems to work, but I think it makes it easier for them to get return on investment by not constantly having to build engines and rocket bodies and et cetera, to compete. So Neutron is not going to be as capable as the Falcon 9. I think it's going to give it a run for its money, at least for some of the lower mass customers. Just real quick, we can't disregard like the Indian Space Research Organization and things like the GSLV or PSLV. The GSLV is not as capable as a Falcon 9, but the Indians do launch things less expensively than, say, ULA or Blue or Arianespace. So that's always an option. But they just, right now, they still, despite all the changes that they're doing to make it more commercial friendly in their country, they are still a little slow in getting launches. You know, their launch cadence is pretty low.
Okay, great. So you mentioned there with regards to Rocket Lab as an example, and we talked about the SpaceX rideshare program, that the demand that's coming from satellite designers, mission designers, is important in leading, obviously, what happens in the launch segment. And I think a lack of alternative options to SpaceX is having an impact on the industry there, as we talked about. It's a shame we don't have competition in this area at the level that we might expect. On the other hand, you can't deny that the reliability that SpaceX offers is very important for space missions and those who fund them. And we see this effect in how mission designers are operating in the industry. There's an expectation almost that you'll be launching on a SpaceX rocket on SpaceX's schedule from the US to SpaceX's target orbits, particularly in Europe. You have engineers who develop expertise and the knowledge about how to use SpaceX systems, how to deploy, how to integrate, how to qualify, test everything. What's your view on this? So do you see this over-reliance, if we want to call it that, on SpaceX having an impact on the mission designers in the industry?
It already is, but I don't view it as a healthy thing, this dependence, if that's the question that you're asking. So don't get me wrong. It's great that there's a company like SpaceX that can provide reliable launch capability. It seems almost 100% reliability, but I'm hesitant to say that yet. Good launch reliability. It also has the ability to apparently conduct launches fairly quickly for customers. And we saw that with OneWeb, by the way, where OneWeb suddenly found itself at a loss with no Soyuz launches available. And SpaceX basically within a few months was able to launch a few OneWeb satellites. So that just shows you how flexible this company can be. And let's see. But as far as the dependency, I just don't view it. So it's good to have a strong company like SpaceX, but it's rather alarming and boring that SpaceX is the only company that can do this right now. The alarming part is, yeah, people will get used to working with SpaceX. The companies will have these expectations. The problem is SpaceX kind of has its origin as being a tech company from an entrepreneur in the sector, you know, Musk. And tech companies are great at chasing business, but they aren't great at leading business. Maybe SpaceX will be, what do I want to say, different, but I don't think so, based just on the entrepreneur's behavior and his obstinacy, among other things. With that said, that's going to impact some of the globally, whether we like it or not, just how people build and who they build for and where they want to launch. The problem is, SpaceX launches from launch pads in the United States. There are some companies that work with countries that maybe frown on doing business in the United States. That's a problem. There are very few options aside from that, unless you turn to China or India. So what do you do? And by the way, like India, their GSLV in particular isn't quite as reliable, and they certainly don't launch as often. The Chinese do launch often, but these are multiple systems that they launch. Which one do you choose? And then do you even choose to trust? Can you trust the company that you're giving your technology and your IP essentially to launch, to not pass that on to other companies or even the government, which tends to be a bit nosy about what's going on with its own companies? Right now, SpaceX is that option. The expectation is reasonable. From customers' point of view, they want something reliable. They want something that will launch their satellites quickly. And even better, especially if you're using rideshare, it does it inexpensively. For them, it's what's the problem? I got what I want. I don't know, Howell. It's a dilemma. I still see it. I don't think it's healthy, though, just to have SpaceX be there in this arena. It's very boring. I'd rather see the Godzilla where you have one big company clashing against the other big company and they're fighting it out. And we don't have that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another factor in this, which you mentioned, we end up with a US-centric launch industry. And as you say, there are some countries that can't easily work with the US and their options elsewhere are limited. And I think another factor in there is the amount of business that the US government does with SpaceX, whether that's through the military or NASA. These are the biggest budgets in the space industry in the world, pretty much. And although space is an increasingly global industry with demand around the world, with potential customers for SpaceX launches around the world, they have to deal with the fact that they have to launch with an American company from the US. And in the majority of cases, that's going to be absolutely no problem. As you say, the reliability and the safety, the lack of risk, it makes up for any kind of export controls or other issues that they might go through. But yeah, it's important to note for the industry, I think.
I was going to say, to your point, it is unfortunately a US-centric launch industry now, right? We've got even not just ESA, but you also have the Italian Space Agency, Canadian Space Agency, Taiwan, Argentina, Germany. All their space agencies have launched on a Falcon 9 at one point or another. They've used the services of SpaceX to get their assets in. And for the Europeans in particular, it must be a little irritating that they can't rely on a local system to get their assets up to orbit. Yeah, I'd prefer to see more competition, frankly.
I agree. And I think, but as you mentioned, yeah, we obviously don't discount the amazing advances that SpaceX has made. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next few years in this area with the names that you've mentioned, the kind of big company movements, and then also these smaller launches where they, if and how they can find a niche, assuming they're able to successfully demonstrate technology. We'll obviously keep an eye on this area and see what happens. To move on from the launch segment a little bit, I just wondered more generally, what missions are you most interested in or excited by that are planned for launch in this year or maybe next year? Look right across the industry, or feel free to pick any example that you're, whether they launched by SpaceX or not.
So it's rare for me to be excited about really anything space, believe it or not. I am not that big of a space nerd. I really like space. I think it's a great business. So the things that I think will be most interesting to me, though, would be something like what we're seeing with the commercial lunar payload services contracts going on right now. So you had Astrobotic with its lander that didn't land in January. You had Intuitive Machines with the Odysseus, which landed but then tipped over. You have, I think, three or four more landers available or that are planned to be launched this year to explore the moon. The exploration itself is interesting, but I'm more interested in seeing what the result of that will be if NASA follows up and starts really doubling down on maybe building a transportation infrastructure to the moon. If there's really good reasons aside from exploration, I'm not going to go down the whole helium-3 thing, but there may be other good reasons to be on the moon. you have to, but to get there and to have people be there, you need really reliable transportation. So far, what we've seen from the commercial providers has not really instilled that confidence, I think, that we'd like to have in our transport systems. It'll be great to see what the others offer, including Astrobotic, which will be coming around again, I believe, at the end of the year with a bigger lander. That's interesting to me. Of course, not necessarily a mission. I'm interested just by the after effects, which is if Starship finally makes it to orbit and they can do it as inexpensively, you know, SpaceX can get Starship up there and operate it as inexpensively as they think it's going to be, that will shake up this industry in a way that we have not seen, I think.
To the first point, the lunar missions that we have seen, we have to remember these are commercial companies, obviously, and some of the advances have been amazing. And you've also had, obviously, India, was it last year, landing, becoming the fourth nation to land successfully on the moon as well. Japan's Slim lander, which also tipped over, but was able to generate some results and successfully land. These missions remind us how technically complex this stuff is, although there is commentary about that sounds sometimes as if we're on the verge of imminently colonizing the lunar surface. I think mission by mission, we see there are still a lot of problems to solve. Do we move back now to shorter squat landers? But this is difficult and it's very interesting. The way that NASA has run this program, I think, is opening a lot of people's eyes as well to the opportunities that the moon brings and the ways that we could mention it. And as you say, a transportation system there is fascinating to follow. And yes, Starship obviously is well documented. The dramatic increase in cost-effective up-mass access to orbit would be great. So we'll see certainly what happens there. Now, obviously, you cover a lot of areas and in your work as an analyst, but also as a writer. And I was interested in this aspect of it, being in the communication industry myself. But so on your work, yeah, as a writer and communicator in the space industry, you said just then that you think space is a really interesting business, but also there's a lot of things that are maybe not so exciting and novel about some of the missions going on. What do you think the industry does well in terms of communication? And what do you think it doesn't do so well? What could we work on?
So what this industry does well, I think it does really well at getting the existing space fans excited about things. Obviously, the communication cuts both ways. I don't like the fact that a lot of them use jargon still to obscure what they're doing. Some are non-communicative. And then just the fact that they're playing more on emotion than maybe business for some of them to generate, say, investments, which I guess I get it, but that bothers me some. On the other hand, like I said, they are great at, like NASA, they can get people really excited about something happening, like with the lunar landers. And Astrobotic in particular, I'll just hold them up as that poster child of, they had things going wrong on their mission, but they basically stood up and said, hey, we're just going to let people know what's happening step by step. And that was really good. So that was a really good example of a company not just communicating, but maybe keeping people interested in what was happening with Peregrine. And that to me is unusual for companies, space companies, to do that. The only other one really, I think SpaceX got it originally, right? Where when they conducted a launch, it was one of the, instead of the antiseptic NASA narration that we were seeing, all of a sudden you saw that timeline of when things were happening at the bottom and then it was happening in real time with it. And then you had people talking about it. So there are some great examples of communication. On the other hand, like I said, there's also that problematic aspect where I think people are either trying to be a bit too secretive, and so they say something but it's meaningless, or and we've seen a few of those, or sometimes even worse, when they do say something, they're exhibiting the ignorance of the business they're trying to get into. There's nothing wrong with being ignorant, but when you're trying to get investors excited, that can be problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Astrobotic example was great. Those mission updates that they provided on X and social media, most of them, I think there were like 19 whatever separate mission updates that were given as just pieces of text, short, 100 words, 150 words, and most of them made the news one by one
or there were live blogs that were recorded. It was a very well-run communications campaign for a mission, as you say, not going right.
Just as an aside, at Spacecom, they had a person manning an astrobotic booth there. So here in Orlando, the astrobotic had a booth open. So I asked them as this was happening, what inspired you to do what you did with this mission once it went south? And basically said, it's just, I thought maybe they had a communications backup plan, right? If something goes wrong, this is what we're going to do. And basically the response was, people were interested. So we just kept updating. I was like, okay, good enough. But it's not something that instills confidence in me that they'll do it again.
Yeah, fair enough. But I think also in doing so, they did demonstrate the technical ability that they had. The fact that they were trying things and still getting data from this system that was not doing the right thing showed that they were able to get some positive results out of a negative event. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, John. That's great. We're pretty much done on what the quick question I had. Just finally to wrap up, I wondered if you were optimistic about the space industry over the next few years. We have still a crazy global economic climate. I think global growth is set to be a little bit lower this year than last year, potentially. But the space industry doesn't tally with the global financial system, doesn't move in lockstep with it. So I wondered, if you could just talk at broad strokes about the industry.
Without getting into the economics, generally, I have a fairly optimistic outlook of things will happen in a positive direction. With SpaceX leading, is that ideal? No. But other companies will eventually show up that will give this, SpaceX a run for its money. Like I said, it's good at following, but not necessarily leading. So there will be another company that will follow and maybe even surpass. When that happens, I don't know, but I'm optimistic that it will. And when it does, really the winners will be customers, because that means that they've met this criteria of they will launch as often as a Falcon 9. They will be less costly to use than a Falcon 9. They will provide more opportunities than a Falcon 9. Those are the things that are the baseline that are required just to surpass that capability. Whether Starship comes along, I don't know. All bets are off at that point. But even with Starship, then that makes things more accessible to people generally. So I'm optimistic about that. I would be more optimistic, however, if there were people talking more concretely about some of the things that are happening in orbit, where we are putting a lot more satellites than we've ever done before out in orbit. Yeah, they're spread out by hundreds of miles. They're missing each other sometimes, but sometimes not. And to increase that, which is what SpaceX and Kuiper and others are trying to do, without having really good and in-depth conversations about what to do if X happens. I'm not saying they aren't talking, but I don't get the sense that we're seeing that. That said, I think we still have the capacity to put more satellites up there to conduct other more interesting missions. And we're seeing that, which is another reason for optimism. There are these smaller companies that are out there now that are trying different things out with payloads we never considered before. When you think about a radio frequency monitoring satellite, what Hawkeye 360, that kind of thing was the province of governments and maybe specifically militaries. But now it's a commercial service. But you have other companies just testing different ways to see if they can make life better here on Earth just by playing around with a system that they can deploy less expensively than they would have ever been able to have in the past. And I think as launch, hopefully, because of another competitor, comes even less, we'll see more of that. And so for me, to have more companies out there with satellites in orbit that are offering things to make life here on Earth better for us humans, I think that's a good thing, and I think it'll happen.
Fantastic. Thank you, John. That's a great place to wrap up the conversation today. Just finally, where would you like people to go to find out more about you and your work?
Heck, they can find me almost anywhere, but the main site is illdefined.space. However, I'm also on Substack under that name. You can see my work with Astrolytical, as you found me. So that's with Laura Forsick and her group. I'll occasionally, once a month, write that newsletter that I do gen up is weekly, typically, unless there's a nice vacation in the middle, then I'll let people know before. And then, of course, I'm on Twitter X, Blue Sky, Mastodon. People want to reach out.
Great. Thank you, John. We'll give these links in the show notes to the listeners. And yeah, thank you very much for being here with us today and for all the great insights that you shared with us.
Wow, thank you very much. I really hope that it was all good stuff for you. I had a great time. So thank you.
Great, thank you. And to all our listeners out there, thank you very much too for spending time with us today on the Space Industry Podcast by SatSearch. As mentioned, we'll share more information on where you can find more about John's work. And please stay tuned for another edition of the Space Industry Podcast, where we'll be talking more about the companies, the people, the organizations taking us all into orbit. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space Industry by SatSearch. I hope you enjoyed today's story about one of the companies taking us into orbit. We'll be back soon with more in-depth, behind-the-scenes insights from private space businesses. In the meantime, you can go to satsearch.com for more information on the space industry today, or find us on social media if you have any questions or comments. To stay up to date, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and you can also get each podcast on demand on iTunes, Spotify, the Google Play Store, or whichever podcast service you typically use.